Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broadwasted podcast where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and somewhere, zing, went the strike of my heart to the man that got away. What are you doing the rest of your life? Me? Well, our love is here to stay, so everything is coming up roses if you're finding Wonderland. A house is not a home, so I can't give you anything but love, but our once upon a dream come true is just in time. Joining us today are the usual 50% impossible dreams, including... Kevin, it's about time, Jaeger.
Yes!
Kimberly, our over the rainbow game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Hello.
And with us today is a legend, Sunset Boulevard, Mamma Mia, Wonderland, Jerome Robbins, Broadway, Hairspray, Love Never Dies, and literally too many others. Let's give a big broad-waisted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Karen Mason.
Yay! Here's to ya.
Hey. Cheers.
Y'all ready for this? Cheers.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. It's been a long day.
I know. This whole week, I thought it was like the day before. But it's weird little things that remind me of what day it is. I'll what? This is so random, but like I went into like my fantasy football team to update it. And I like saw that there was a game tonight. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's Thursday. So that was like Tuesday night.
I've never played fantasy football. My great niece has been trying to get me in it, and I just don't understand it. So
it's not as much fantasy as you would expect. I will tell you that.
And in my mind, I was just like, "There's football happening."
Yeah, it's just one more game I could lose at. So
yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We start every episode with, "What are you drinking?"
What are you drinking?
Well, I am drinking
Belvedere
vodka on the rocks, baby. I'm hoping that, you know, perhaps someone from Belvedere will see the show and send me a case.
Sounds great. Love it.
Brian, I see a champagne of beers in your hand.
Yes, of course, the champagne of beers, Miller High Life.
Very nice.
My downstairs neighbors moved out yesterday, so... they were like, hey, come down and take all this box of fridge stuff that we can't move with. And there was a six pack of Miller High Life. So I'm like, you know what? Champagne of beers it is.
Absolutely. And free. The price was great.
Perfect price. Kevin.
I was inspired by Brian's beer drinking this week. So I went out today and got myself a Sam Adams Oktoberfest.
Oh,
kind of yes. That's going into the fall. And it's delicious.
It's not pumpkin, is it?
I mean, it's orange, so that makes me think it is.
Oh,
it's just Oktoberfest.
Pumpkin should just not be put into absolutely everything.
It's a unique malt blend to provide a deep, robust color and smooth, rich flavor.
Wow.
There's nothing, it doesn't say anything about pumpkin.
So leaves. They put leaves in it.
Be my baking PSA that most of the time, if you're getting a pumpkin something, it's just pumpkin pie spice. There's no pumpkin.
Yeah, right.
It's just cinnamon and nutmeg and cardamom and cloves. Like,
what if you like you like buy a pumpkin and cut it open, just the spice falls out?
Well, whatever it is, tis delicious.
Spices you put on sans pumpkin is what you get in that latte.
Perfect. Kimberly, are you still on a fall kick?
I am on a fall kick, and actually, I almost put pumpkin pie spice in this.
It's the Bar Hill.
Where it'd be grainy. It's Bar Hill Tomcat Gin with fresh apple cider, but I made it a spritzer today.
Ooh,
I put a little lime tonic water.
That sounds really good, and I don't even like gin.
It's a Tomcat Gin, so it looks like whiskey.
And it's very close by. That's good.
It's very close by. But it's aged in whiskey barrels. So it has the amber color.
Yeah. So Karen, we're on the same page. Kevin and I are on the same page as you. Gin is not our thing, but I will say the closest thing to getting us to drink gin is that Tomcat gin.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay. You tricked me.
I said close.
I don't know. There's something weird about the taste. I just
not for me.
Karen, what's your favorite musical?
The one I'm being paid for.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, I'd have to say probably, and it's an oldie but a goodie, is Gypsy. I do love Gypsy.
Oh, you mean the best musical ever?
The best musical ever. You know, it's got a great book. It's got a great score. Everything about it is, it's just put together so beautifully. That everybody gets a payoff, which is kind of nice. I think most everybody, except for Herbie, gets a payoff, and that's kind of nice.
Poor Herbie.
But poor Herbie. I know, poor Herbie. Yeah.
It's so true.
But it is. It is. The guy works his tail off, and, you know, you can just go. But it's a great role. Mama Rose is such a fabulous role. So, you know, that or even one of the strippers. I'm happy to...
Oh, yeah.
Any one of those ladies would be good.
We just watched the Bette Midler one for the podcast. And that that stripper scene, like, we're watching Bette Midler as Mama Rose. And, like, the stripper scene is the one that stands out.
Yeah, well, it does. Listen, Mama Rose works her cojones off. And then the three strippers show up for one song, couple scenes, and they walk off with the show. So there's nothing fair about it.
You just described Kevin on this podcast. He just he steals it. We'll get to Kevin's corner, and then she can make a decision for herself.
He does have a gimmick.
Yeah, he does. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about. Your career is massive and wonderful, and with so many.
That's because I'm old.
Well, I'm sure there's people who do not have the kind of career that you had. But I guess let's talk about kind of your trajectory. Kind of what was like, what was kind of aside from like once you were able to kind of like secure jobs and you felt a little bit more comfortable, or maybe you never felt comfortable. Like, what was. Aside from just like getting the job, is there something that you look for when like something presents itself to you? And has that changed over the course of your career?
I don't feel, and I don't know if I've ever had that luxury to be able to choose roles. You know, usually it's, hey, I need a job and this is happening. And, you know, I go and audition, and if I'm lucky, I get it. And if I'm not, then I go and audition for something else. But I kind of feel like the first thing that changed my life was not even happened here in New York, but in Chicago, which is where I grew up. And it was meeting a friend of mine. Well, he became a friend. He was my music director for 16 years. His name was Brian Lasser. And I was doing community theater and particularly unhappy out in the suburbs of Chicago, and went and auditioned at this restaurant called Lawrence of Oregano that had auditions for singing waiters and waitresses. I know. And that was just one of a chain of silly names, but great. Yeah. And they were having singing waiters and waitresses. So my sister gave me this sign that said, it was in the bathroom, as a matter of fact, you know, having these auditions. So I called up because I really wanted to get closer to people who were getting paid for doing what I was doing for free out in the suburbs. So I went and auditioned and met Brian, and we started doing nightclubs and cabarets and just working together. It was such a, there was such an attraction between the two of us musically that we worked together for 16 years. And it just changed my life. It totally changed my life. And then when we decided, we had gone as far as we could in Chicago, and it was either we go to one of the coasts.
Yeah.
But both of us really wanted to be in New York. So we moved here and, you know, kind of trotted along through. We worked down at the Duplex, which was at that time, it's the one that was on the other side of the street, you know, the older Duplex. And 55 Grove, I think, was the name of the number. And worked there every Saturday for a year or two.
Oh, wow.
And would go back to Chicago to make money to come back here to lose it. And then, you know, my first Broadway show was a show called, I did some off-Broadway stuff. I went out of town to, my first job was getting hired to work in Wichita, Kansas at the Music Theater in Wichita.
Oh, wow.
To play Fanny Bryce, by the way.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Here is a girl, a Midwestern Catholic girl. Playing a Brooklyn Jew in Wichita, Kansas.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I would have it no other way.
And you know, then I get back in town and my first Broadway show closes on opening night. It was a show nobody has even heard of. I bet you haven't. Called Play Me a Country Song. See, I see those faces. Nope. Not a clue.
That's just me to the DJ at 1 a.m.
And it was a show that was just destined for failure, actually, because the writers kept arguing and fighting and... oh, my God, it was such a mess. I mean, the director was not a real director, and so he was kind of an alcoholic. And so he would, yeah, but he would tell everybody, well, just move where you feel like moving, and so everybody kind of went down center. And it was, listen, it had some fun music and I loved the cast. It was so great. I got to rub elbows with, you know, people who in my generation were legends, you know, Ron Carroll and Mary Gordon Murray and all these people that I really respected. But on opening night, they took us out. Our party was on the Circle Line tour. And yeah, it should have been really good.
Yeah.
But we got our pink slips on the way out. And I think it's just because they didn't want anybody reading the reviews.
They took us out on a boat.
And sure. I mean, it's an entire ship filled with alcoholics. Everybody smashed out of their minds because they know the show is going to close. But that was my first experience. But you know,
wow.
you keep going.
I think there's a show in just the boat. Someone might call it a showboat.
Wow.
Some might. If they had pride, they perhaps would not.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But you know, you just keep going. You know, you just keep going until something sticks. And then you move on to the next one. And
sure.
You just keep hoping that something will happen. That I still audition. I mean, for Love Never Dies,
yeah.
I had to go in and audition, you know, a couple times. And so I would love to think that I had the kind of career that they would call me while I'm sitting at home in my, you know, pajamas. But no, I still have to go out and sling it a little bit.
Sure. Well, let's talk about Love Never Dies for a second. You went on a tour with Love Never Dies. What was it like to go out on tour with obviously a sequel to something that is one of the most well-known musical properties like of all time, and to kind of bring that story to people across the states. And that was you were on the first national tour with
the only national tour. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, talk kind of about that experience in terms of, you know, expectations people had and kind of what that experience was like to kind of share the other piece of the story that people do not know or didn't know even existed until then.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a beautiful, I'd only seen the tape from the Australian production. Mm-hmm. And ours was kind of, a lot of the set pieces and stuff were lifted from that production. So we had a similar look. But this was my first tour. I called it my Medicare tour because, you know, I was a little, long in the tooth to start touring. But my husband, Paul, and I talked about it, and it was like, you know what, this is going to be a fun thing. And the expectation was that perhaps it would move to Broadway. Sure. So, yeah. And it was amazing. The audiences loved it. Loved it. Mm-hmm. It really is a beautiful show. It's a beautiful show. It's gotten slammed a lot, but it's lovely to look at. And did any of you see it at all?
Brian,
I did. I saw it in Hartford because I was living, Megan Paterno, Christine, friend of the show, was my roommate at the time.
Oh.
So we went up to Hartford and saw you all in the production. We had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, listen, it's got, like every show, when people say, oh, it has such flaws. And I think there's only one show that really doesn't, and that's Gypsy. But every show but every show has, you know, inconsistencies and moments that maybe don't make total sense. I mean, it's a musical. People are breaking into dance and song. So you kind of have to suspend a little bit of that. But I thought it delivered an impact, and the cast was fantastic. I loved doing it. I loved my moment at the end of Act One where I get to... I'd never played someone as strong as Madame Giry, and I loved it. It was good. It was fun. And it was a great cast. You know, I had auditioned for the Madame Giry and the Phantom, the first Phantom, and can't sing it, and yet they kept calling me in. But it was always just like, I can't sing this, and I'd work on it and work on it and work on it and go in, and Kristen Blodgett would listen to me so sweetly and then go, Karen, you know, it's just not quite what we're looking for. But while we have you in the room, could you sing something for us? Like, sure.
They just book themselves okay. In the middle of their day.
Yeah, right. Kind of like in a little entertainment, doing a little show.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd come out of the room and all these women looking like it was an Italian funeral, because everybody's in black, were, you know, going, what actually went on when you're singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow at your audition for Phantom? But the audiences loved it. The fans were crazy. Some people followed us from town to town to town. I've never seen that kind of devotion. You actually do develop a bit of a relationship with the people that you recognize over a period of time, and the gifts that they give. I mean, it was remarkable. And I did Mamma Mia, I mean, which was, you know, crazy. People were nutty about that show, and it was right after 9/11. So, you know, there was all that energy. But there was something different about this. Maybe it was because we were moving from town to town, but to have people follow you is just wild. And bring you presents all the time and cookies and... you know, fan art.
Sure. Well, we do a little segment here called Stage Door Stories. I mean, you talked about Mamma Mia, Love Never Dies, and I'm sure you have a lot of other ones That's my dog squeaking in the background. He chooses the whole day to sleep. He chooses the whole day to sleep, and he's like, "Oh, you're doing a podcast? Let me squeak my toy." So you've been talking about Mamma Mia and Love Never Dies. I guess, do you have any stage door stories that heartfelt reminisce that you think about kind of when I bring up the stage door that kind of encapsulate that stage door feeling or moment for you as an actress?
Yeah, probably Mamma Mia. Just because it was right, we started previews and opened right after 9/11, and in the theater, Judy Kay and I would talk about this all the time. That, you know, that retrospective, the mega mix at the end when everybody.
Oh, we know the mega mix.
Yeah.
We are big mega. We are pro mega mix here at Broadway Sid.
Yeah, well, listen, I started leg lifts from the day I found out I had nothing. Awesome. I thought, oh my God, I have to wear white spandex. But when they started that mega mix, I mean, people were, it was kind of a safe space in the theater. And so the energy that they felt about being in a safe space was overwhelming. And it was like this rush of energy that came at us for the mega mix. I mean, it was almost, Judy said, it's almost like, it's probably what a rock star, that energy comes at them. And at the stage door, people would be in tears thanking us for, you know, giving them a couple of hours away from thinking about what has happened to New York. I mean, in tears. And I like to believe that every time we set foot on a stage, we give people the opportunity. That to me is kind of the gold ring of theater and performance, is that we give people a chance to share what they're feeling, escape what they're feeling. You know, that's the joy of what we can do. And to see people weeping after Mamma Mia, you know, I mean, we thought, oh, it's such a silly little thing, but to the audience, and it soon became to us, it became a real respite. It became a place of, you know, separation. You could go and just forget.
Sure.
That was really, really lovely, really, and overwhelming too.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Like that giving people such a gift in a time when it's needed, and like not, almost not realizing it first, and then kind of like it evolving over time. That must be such a beautiful thing to be a part of.
Yeah, you know, and Broadway really stepped up. The Broadway shows that that opened pretty fast. I have a great deal of respect for the Broadway community, for the theatrical community, in New York, and throughout the country, but in New York in particular, you know, there's a very supportive, feeling, and everybody just wants to get out there and do their job and to have that suspended for a short period of time around 9/11 was hard. But, you know, people came back, and the audiences, we didn't know if we'd get an audience, but people supported.
And you need an audience in the Winter Garden, that's
yes,
for
you
sure.
Do. Yeah. It's lonely without an audience. Yeah.
Do you know where else you need an audience? Tuesdays in the corner with Kevin.
Uh-oh. Wait, can I just tell you who was at my door?
Who?
Who?
That was my neighbors letting me know that I left my keys in the door.
Oh!
Your keys.
Wow.
Well done.
That's the kind of day I'm having. Welcome, everyone.
Wow. Well, have another sip.
Yeah, keep taking that Tomcat.
Sit back, Kimberly. I got this for a minute. Here in Kevin's corner. And so today, Karen, we're going to be playing some Actually, everyone's going to be playing together. So you're not the only one. Brian, okay, you're playing this time too.
Wonderful.
So this game is called Excuse Me, Aren't You? And the way it works is I'm going
to
say...
Sorry, who gave you permission to play a game?
I know, I'm sorry.
Wow, very territorial.
Excuse me, aren't you? So the way this is going to work is I'm going to say, excuse me, aren't you? And then describe a person who shares the first name with one of you three people.
Okay.
Oh.
Wow. I have to say to all three of you that the part that really scared me was the game part.
There aren't a lot of Kimberlys in the world, so let's see.
There's Kimberly or some variation of that name.
Got it.
Brian.
I'll guess them all now.
Which doesn't have to be the Y-A-N, just so
okay.
You know.
Sure, sure.
And then our guest was Karen. So I'm going to say this, describe this person. If you think it's you, you say, no, I'm not, and then say that person's name. Does that make sense?
Maybe. Yes.
All right, I'll explain it. So, for example, if I said, excuse me, aren't you the little boy from Home Alone who gets left by himself?
Oh, I see. Okay.
I would say, no, I'm not Kevin McAllister, because I'm Kevin. So you don't say anything if it's not your name. And I'm trying to see if I can get that. And then after a few seconds, if they don't get it, I'll open it up to anybody if you can get the answer.
Right. I understand. Okay.
Oh, Lord.
All right. So let's see how this goes.
Okay.
Excuse me. Aren't you the person who won the Emmy Award for Outstanding Lead Performer in a Drama Series in 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2014?
No, Kevin, I'm not Bryan Cranston.
Good job.
Wow, that's impressive. Be easier with me.
No, me too.
Please,
all right.
Sir.
Next one. Excuse me, aren't you the performer who paired with their older brother Richard to tell everyone that just like me, you all long to be close to you?
No, sir. I'm not Karen Carpenter. Thank you.
There you go. Excuse me. Aren't you the actor I saw opposite Mia Farrow in A.R. Gurney's Love Letters on Broadway? Who is also not the namesake they're talking about on South Park either?
Wow.
Who's an Irish actor?
Wow.
No, Kevin. I'm not Brian.
Who's Tommy Boy's dad?
Dennehy.
Oh, Dennehy. Dennehy. I'm not Brian Dennehy.
Thank you. See, I'm better with working with a group.
Karen gets a steal.
I got half of it.
Okay, next one. Excuse me, aren't you the next door neighbor of Stephanie, Michelle, and your best friend DJ?
No, I'm not Kimmy. What's her face?
Gibbler.
Gibbler?
Gibbler. Kimberly gets the points.
Wow, what is that?
From
Full House.
Full House.
Oh. I've never really watched it, but so I'm glad I knew her name. I keep tabs on people with my name.
Excuse me, aren't you the most well-loved companion of Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones?
Oh shoot. Karen, no, Kevin, I'm not Karen. I can see her.
Isn't your last name just like the first name of the man who played the MC in the revival of Cabaret?
Alan?
Cumming?
The first name.
Alan? Yeah. Karen Allen!
There it is.
Thank you!
Excuse me, aren't you married to my former boss? The answer can be yes.
Oh.
If it is actually you.
Oh, I got it.
What? Who's your former boss? I don't have that.
Oh, answer. Me?
When I was a singing waiter.
Oh, yes, I am Kimberly Cooper Schmidt.
There you go.
It has never registered to me that he was in charge of you.
Yeah, he was for a whole summer.
Ugh. Where'd you work?
At the Showplace Ice Cream Parlor on Long Beach Island.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was.
I bet the stories you have are fabulous.
Where I met Brian Kimberly.
Oh my God.
We definitely have a lot of stories.
Yeah.
Singing waiters and waitresses?
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Slinging ice cream in like a 1950s style ice cream parlor.
Yep.
I was slinging Italian food at
Lawrence of Arabia is something I will never forget in my entire life.
Incredible.
Great name, right?
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite movie.
Business venture is just pun restaurant names.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. I got two more here.
Okay.
Here we go. Excuse me. Aren't you the wisecracking literal booze hound on the once canceled but then super popular and now not as popular adult cartoon series?
Oh.
Adult cartoon series?
No, Brian. No, Kevin. I'm not Brian the dog from Family Guy.
What's his last name?
Brian Griffin?
There you go.
Finally canceled.
Wow.
And the last one. Excuse me. Aren't you the fabulous performer I saw in the Judy Garland biomusical at Paper Mill?
Not playing Judy Garland. Why, yes, Kevin, I am.
And this has been Kevin's Corner, and I looked at the score, and Karen won.
Yay! Do I get a prize?
That's just because you made
more questions.
Did you all see? Did you see?
We did. Chasing Rainbows? Yeah, we all saw it.
I love that. I love doing that show. That was so much fun.
That was great. We had a really great time that night.
Loved my song.
Yeah, you had a great one.
Yeah, I did. Short and to the point with a big note at the end.
Oh, that's so good.
So true.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Speaking of songs that you've sung, you have coming up a special online video broadcast of your acclaimed show, Mason at Mama's, in March.
Yeah.
Recorded at the nightclub Don't Tell Mama, but it was recorded in 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're actually going to be able to this is very cool. You're going to be able to stream it for three performances on a limited basis. It's October 15th at 8 p.m., October 17th at 8 p.m., and then October.
October 17th at 2.
At 2. Okay. Yeah. So that's
a matinee.
Yes, a matinee. And then on Sunday at 3. So a real
matinee. 3. Yeah. Cool.
We're going to matinee.
But let's talk about that.
Okay.
Let's talk about that, kind of your song selection, kind of based on your album. Can we talk about kind of, talk about the iteration on the album and then kind of what you're what your thought process, what your creative process was to bring that in a cabaret setting and really kind of like work through the flow of those songs.
Well, with that show, I opened Don't Tell Mama back in 1982. And so it was Nancy Lamott and myself. We were the co-openers. And we each took, like, I'd take early, and then she'd take late, and then I'd take early. Aww. And, she, you know, it was like late, early, late, early for a couple of weeks. And we each had, part of the opening night, and then we each had shows after that. But I worked there a few times. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't, moved on to other clubs, as one does. And then in 2015, I was looking for a nightclub where I could do a long run. And it's kind of changed in New York from when I started. Obviously, nothing stays the same. And so I was looking for, I wanted to do a longer run. And so Sidney Meier gave me Sundays and Mondays for 6 weeks. And we put together, Barry Kleinbord, Chris Denny, and myself put together this show that kind of incorporated, I did what was my first and second song back in 1982, which were arrangements which had been done for me by Brian Lasser, who I met mm-hmm. at Lawrence of Oregano's.
No, I'm not Brian Lasser. we're not still playing? Oh, okay.
And so we put together a show that had a lot of that. It also had some of my Broadway credits. You know, I did As If We Never Said Goodbye from Sunset. But we did a really, it was just an amalgam of old and brand new, and told a lot of stories about that first night back in 1982, when everything looked very fresh and beautiful, and mm-hmm. we had celebrities in the audience. And back in 1982, it was an exciting, a cabaret opening was very exciting. So I wanted to honor that in the place that the room that we actually did start.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it was really fun. Oh my God, I loved it. And I
bet you have great stories from that.
Why, yes, I do. And going back, we sold out every show. We decided to keep the ticket price to like $15.
Oh, wow.
And, I really wanted people to come and share it. Hmm. I wanted this to be an exciting thing. And I also wanted to sell it out. So I figured 15 would do it, I think. Yeah. It was, opening with Brian had done this arrangement of Something's Coming that is one on my first CD. And I've always loved it. And Chris has always loved it. So we did that as the opener. But back in 1982, Brian went to the piano and, they lowered the lights and made their little announcement. And we told the story of that the technical director at the time said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Don't Tell Mama is proud to present Miss Karen Akers."
Yes, of course, Karen Akers.
So I, didn't quite get the introduction I had hoped, but we had a great time, and it was exciting in cabaret back then. Mm. I think it's probably much harder for people now doing cabaret. It's a much more expensive endeavor. It's mm-hmm. a one-off, and have any of you done nightclub acts or,
Kevin cabaret? Put on a performance of his music in a cabaret-type setting.
We did.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Where did you do it, Kevin?
It was at the Metropolitan Room before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my Christmas album I recorded at the Metropolitan.
Yeah, they were really nice.
Yeah, it was a great space.
Yeah, it was nice.
Oh, too bad. Yeah. Another one bites the dust.
Oh, no.
But putting that show together, we just wanted it to be a little bit of everything. And, it did. It started out with when I first got to New York and, you know, and did the Don't Tell Mama thing and just told those stories and then ended with one of my favorite songs, they're all favorites, is In My Life, the Beatles tune.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
There are places I remember all my life. Such a beautiful song. So it just seemed really appropriate to do that at the end of that show.
Sure.
When we recorded it, Michael Lee Stever was the guy who filmed it. And, you know, I looked at it right after the show, and honestly, I cannot look at myself usually. It's really hard to watch. I'm hypercritical. And, you know, oh, my God, you look so bad there. Look at that big mouth, those hands, you know. I mean, it's all. And so it's good to have a little distance for me. So during the pandemic, Michael found it. And he said, you know, you really ought to do something with this. So he worked on it, made me look a little, you know, less pale. And my husband worked on it and mastered the sound. And Paul Rolnick. You know, and I watched it and I thought, okay, it's really lovely. It's really, and it's so nice to see somebody with an audience. You know, we don't get that now.
Yeah, it's
we
so
don't
true.
See a performer with an audience and to see that reaction and that chemistry was just, it was really lovely to watch. I thought, okay, well, if, you know, if we can do something with it, let's do it, you know. And so we're doing these three performances, performances, and hopefully people will come.
Yeah, well, we've seen it, so we can say that it is spectacular. Again, that's October 15th at 8, October 17th at 2, October 18th at 3 p.m. Check it out on those dates. Again, it's $15. It is so worth every penny.
Thank you.
You can go to KarenMason.com and kind of get, not kind of, you can get tickets there. but we would highly, highly suggest it. It's, again, you know, we're watching all these kind of concerts online and they're wonderful, but there was, you know, I couldn't pinpoint it until you said it. There was something kind of magical, like hearing clapping and like, you know, going like, there was, it was a nostalgia that we shouldn't have. It was so...
You know, I mean, listen, I've been trying to, like, sing and do all of these projects, trying to keep myself occupied, but I just did something for the York Theater, and they're doing a series of concerts as fundraisers, but, you know, you sing to a little hole in your computer, or you sing to the camera, and I have to say, I'm a live performer. I like that reaction. I like people to let me know if they're paying attention, you know. This is why I like to look at people in the audience, by the way, because I like to make sure they haven't fallen asleep.
And if they have, wake them up.
Wake them up. You know, there's always a big belt note right around the corner.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, sorry, Kimberly, go for it. Sorry.
Oh, I was just saying that it's true. The connection between a performer when they're singing to an audience versus singing to the Zoom is completely different. It changes everything.
I mean, I can, you know, we're all very good now. I don't know if you were really good at it before, but I've gotten pretty good now at singing to the little hole in the computer. But... or at least I've gotten more comfortable, but it's still that chemistry in a room, you know, and in some place like Don't Tell Mama, which is it seats 100 maybe.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have this, the energy just, it's just great.
Yeah.
I do miss that. I miss that a lot.
Sure.
So Kevin, what do you write?
I write plays and musicals.
How fantastic.
Yeah, so we put out like some of like the standalone songs, and then some of the from like a piece we are working on.
Well, if you ever need an old belter,
yes.
Should we play a game?
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of writing musicals,
Kevin's like, I gotta go write a song. I can't play.
I know.
very loud is out of my window. Great. The noises of Washington Heights.
Oh, you're in Washington Heights.
I am.
I'm in Queens.
Oh, Brian's in Brooklyn. We've got the boroughs represented.
Yeah.
The Bronx.
I'm almost there. Yeah.
Yeah. Close enough.
Perfect. Well, speaking of writing a musical, speaking of Love Never Dies, because when you hear this music from my window.
Yes, oh, a little bit.
Okay. I have a game inspired by Love Never Dies and also the Huffington Post listicle, 10 cliches about love that won't save your marriage. And so how this will work is you each get to create a new musical based on one of these cliched love sayings.
Great. So
it's a game called Love Story. I also have my scenery bag full of Lights of Broadway show cards. So if you need inspiration for your musical, I can pull you out some actors and creative team members.
Nice. And we very can prepared.
And then we'll play everyone's favorite game, Say When, to figure out which phrase you get to use.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Kevin, would you like to go first?
Sure.
Okay, let me get to the top. Say when.
When.
You had me at hello is the title of your musical.
And it can't just be Jerry Maguire.
No, I cannot.
Okay. Okay.
Let me know if you need an actor or anyone.
Yes, I'd actually like two actors, please. Like,
okay.
And then I'll go from there.
Perfect. You have Sarah Bareilles and Brandon Uranowitz.
I'm obsessed.
Oh.
Okay, so you had me at hello at the musical written by Sarah Bareilles,
yes,
but starring Sarah Bareilles and Brandon Uranowitz as opposites who meet in a foreign country where Sarah Bareilles' job is to teach people who are coming there to like work for an extended period, like passable language that they need to like get through day-to-day life. So she teaches him the first part, the lesson of everything that she teaches is hello. So she can get him to, so he like can say hello, because that's like the first thing you have to learn. but he has a really hard time pronouncing the hello. So it takes a really like long, a lot of work. And like, she's mad because like you get paid by the number of students you teach. And like, he's taking forever to learn how to say hello. And then finally he says it right at the end of intermission, but now she's fallen in love with him. So she starts teaching him wrong so that it takes longer to be with him. And then they fall in love.
This wow. is delightful.
Yes, I've already purchased my ticket.
I know, me too. The advance is very good.
That's right. My opening night outfit.
Brian, would you like a turn?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Wow. I'm going to really suck at this, I think.
It'd be great.
It can be a when? Group effort.
When?
Love is blind.
Okay. I'm going to take, can I have three people, please? Mm-hmm. Okay. Love is blind.
Okay. You have, well, they're not all actors. Is that fine?
Yeah.
Okay. You have David Diggs.
Great.
Andy Blankenbuehler.
Wonderful.
And Harold Prince.
Oh, okay. Okay. So Love is Blind is a musical that is in the dark. The ooh. Audience is in there and you're sitting in the dark for, it's an hour. It's like 70 minutes, no intermission. So it's perfect. Not too freaky deaky. But you're sitting in the dark. And so let me take this back. It starts with like a full musical and everything. And about this, these girls who are going to the restaurant Dans le Noir, which is that the blind restaurant where you eat in the dark and you pre-order your food, you go in, you sit down, everything's in the dark.
Brian, are you doing About Time, the musical?
No. I've actually been to Dans le Noir when it had a pop-up in New York. It's super cool. But that, yes, that is a scene in About Time. But so they go in and it's about these girls who are there, and one of the, so it's for this girl's bachelor party, but we end up following one of her friends, and she meets somebody there. And it's about their conversation and their, and there are subplots with the other girls. Once they get to the restaurant, everything is dark and you're only hearing these characters sing to each other and all of that in the dark. And then finally at the end, like the lights come up and it reveals who they are. And like every, like the audience probably isn't confused because they know who the actors are beforehand. But like them on stage, like have to figure out who's who. And then there's a little bit of like confusion and they all end up, you know, falling in love and it's great and it's wonderful. The lead male is David Diggs. It's choreographed by Andy Blankenbuehler. He's very excited he's staging it. He wants it to be a little bit more, dancey in the dark. It's produced by Hal Prince's estate, of course. And if we pick one more female, that's who the lead is.
By the way, my triple pirouette for an audition in the dark is brilliant.
It's like,
actually, that's the only way I can do a triple pirouette is in the dark.
Cynthia Erivo is your great. Other.
Oh. Wonderful.
Nice.
Wonderful. It's like, it's like
out in the dark.
Yeah. Oh man, that's going to be, that'll be so powerful. Just hearing that pierce through the dark and like almost creating its own light. Man, I love it. Love is blind.
Love is blind. Again, I purchased my ticket.
All right, Karen, would you like a turn?
Oh God, no, but yes. Okay. All I'm going to say is you guys have to help me. If I look totally confused and there's a long pause.
You got it.
Okay.
Say when.
Sure. When?
Love the one you're with.
Wow. Kevin, would you like
to? Well, that's
okay, give me a couple of actors.
Oh, yeah, Judith.
Let's see. Nathan Lane.
All right. Always good for comedy.
Sally Field.
Wow. This is an older cast. This is good.
And Patrick Page.
Very nice.
Honestly, Karen, you don't need to describe it to us. I bought my ticket already.
Excellent.
It's a love triangle.
What if it's the three of them? So Sally Field's character goes to see a spiritualist who can predict the future, like a fortune teller. And the fortune teller tells her she's going to sit next to the man on an airplane that she's going to marry and be with the rest of her life.
Oh.
So she gets to the airplane, and it's one of those airplanes where there's three seats instead of two, and she's in the middle between Patrick Page and Nathan Lane.
Oh, yeah.
And so the whole flight, she's trying to figure out which one of them she's supposed to get off the plane with and be with the rest of her life.
Again, have purchased my ticket.
Bought my ticket.
That sounds great.
Yeah, and it does, actually.
Of course, the twist is that there's some kind of, a flight attendant man that, they treat like crap the whole time, but he's the one that she's supposed to be with, and, she gets off with the flight attendant. It's totally a thing.
Oh, wow. She gets scared and, goes inside.
So, something happens, the one guy's, locked, Nathan Lane character obviously gets locked in the bathroom. They have to do an emergency landing. And so then the flight attendant sits next to her during the emergency landing. That's when they realize she's supposed to be with him.
I love it. Okay.
Well, I can see why you're a writer, Kevin.
Yeah. It's just the beard.
But Kevin can also just do mine again, too. Ready? Say when.
When?
Love hurts. And let's pull some people.
Love hurts.
Elaine Stritch.
Oh, love hurts.
Matthew Broderick. Let's get one more. Chip Zine.
Oh, again, another older cast. I like this.
Did you say Elaine Stritch? Matthew Broderick
and Chip Zine.
And Chip Zine.
Yes.
This is perfect. So Love Hurts is about So Elaine Stritch, when she's still alive, she has gotten to that age. I don't know if this happens when you get older or if it's just like it's a condition that can happen to anybody, but it happens to her where she no longer can feel pain. So she, her
stuff that happens to everyone as they age.
Kevin, that's Kevin. That's what happens to a Bond villain where they can't feel pain anymore. Yeah, right. I think you're confusing old age with the world is not enough.
Right.
So when you turn 75, you have no more pain receptors.
I don't know why I just told myself, like, get through 60 years, and like 61 is just like, it all feels good.
Yeah, I'm just telling you it doesn't happen, but go ahead.
Okay, so she has this condition where she suddenly doesn't feel pain anymore, and because of that, she's being very reckless and going crazy, because, like, even if she breaks an arm, it doesn't hurt and stuff like that. And so Chip Nine is her son, her adult son, who's like losing his mind and trying to make her like rein herself in. And then Matthew Broderick is her doctor, and he's trying to figure out, like, because she's also like all of her ailments are getting better because she's like doing all these like physical activity things and stuff. So he doesn't know if he should tell her to stop or not. So that love hurts.
This is good because I see a really good 11 o'clock number in this one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, where she's just doing cartwheels and throwing herself, like doing pratfalls.
Yeah.
It's like a big number called Can You Feel It?
Amazing. Oh, I can play this game with you forever, Kevin. I'm having a prompt.
Workout.
That's impressive.
Yeah, go get some work done tonight.
Yeah, you're like, I got three musicals to write.
Love story.
That was fun, Kimberly.
Thank you.
That's amazing that you think up all these games. I love that.
Oh, thanks.
Kimberly told them the prompts before this.
No,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I have played many a similar game, and perhaps he was prepared.
Well, that brings us to the end of our episode, really.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, this hour went by pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, it's been an hour.
Yeah.
You made it through.
Wow. Oh, thank God. I watched my press agent, Dan Fortune, said, you know, watch a couple of them because it's not your typical show. And I thought, oh no.
We love Dan. Dan wouldn't have put us in touch if he didn't think that you could handle the brutalness. Well,
I said, are you sure it's not going to be like Grandma Visits Broadway?
Oh, God. No.
You brought a bottle of Belvedere. We knew we were going to be on.
We were friends from the beginning.
Yeah.
That's true. That's all we needed to see. We're good here.
Absolutely.
We're our best friends.
But thank you so much for joining us. You're delightful, and we had a blast, and we hope you did too.
I did. And thank you for writing those musicals, Kevin.
Yeah.
again, don't want you to forget, you can go to KarenMason.com and purchase tickets to watch Mason at Mama's in March. Again, that's October 15th at 8. Saturday, October 17th at 2, and then Sunday, the 18th of October at 3 p.m., $15 tickets. It is totally worth it. Audience, wonderful performance, and it's a delight all the way around. So check that out. You can also find her albums wherever you buy music. but you can find us on social media at Broadwasted. You can Twitter and Instagram. You can, of course, find us on Facebook. Join our Facebook group. It's we do some theater nerdy stuff there. Kevin heads that with some polls that he never wins.
Never win the polls. I always set him up to win, and I still lose.
Literally, you could be like, "Who's your favorite Kevin on the podcast?" And like, Kimberly would still win.
Kimberly and Aaron would win.
Yeah, you can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/broadwasted, with some awesome content. And then, of course, you can find this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and, of course, iTunes. Rate and review us there. 5 stars, please.
Thank you.
You all are so cute. You are.
No, we're also tipsy. But thank you, Karen, so much. We've enjoyed your work throughout your entire career, and we can't wait to see what's next.
Thank you
so much for taking the time to hang out with us. But
my pleasure.
You know, we end every episode with a quote, and today's is, we do, Kevin. Honestly, I forget sometimes too, man. Sometimes at the beginning of episodes, I'll be like, oh, I never picked a quote. So I'm just like, well, guess we're winging it. But today I did. And it's, I have a dream, a song to sing to help me cope with anything. If you see the wonder of a fairy tale, you can take the future even if you fail. Which kind of lines up with kind of the story that you told about Mamma Mia today. So I'm happy that that accidentally worked out. But thank you again so much. We raise our glass.
Here's to you all.
Cheers to you. And as we end every episode, Zoo-doo-wa. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you, Karen.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.